Welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, H.C. Felder, and today the topic is UFOs, a Christian perspective. And to talk with me about this, I have Dr. Doug Potter. Let me tell you about Dr. Potter. He has a Bachelor's of Science from Ohio Northern University in Industrial Technology, a Master's of Art from Ball State University in Technology Education, Master of Arts in Apologetics from Southern Evangelical Seminary, Doctor of Ministry from Southern Evangelical Seminary, and he's also Instructor of Apologetics and Director of the Doctor of Ministry Program at Southern Evangelical Seminary. Welcome to the show, Dr. Doug Potter.
It's great to be with you, Harold.
Glad to have you here. What have I left out?
That pretty much covers it. I don't think that you've left much out at all.
I didn't leave anything out about your educational stuff, but what else did you want to tell folks? Him, your wife.
Yes, I am married.
See, y'all guys. Okay.
You're exactly right. Okay. And I don't want to leave out my daughter as well.
Okay, all right.
And we're very happy to be together.
All right.
That's happy good. To be here.
That's good to hear.
Good.
Okay, Doug, what are UFOs? We're going to get right to it.
That seems to be the big question. And some of that kind of depends on what your worldview is and what you're going to do with the evidence about UFOs. And you mentioned we want to take a Christian perspective to UFOs, and that's right. Actually very important. And if we can take the position that Christianity is true, as you mentioned, defending the historic Christian faith, right. Then let's take a look at the evidence and see where the evidence basically leads us. And I'd really like to approach the topic by looking at it from a scientific understanding and look at what some scientists have done. Because lots of people have looked out on a clear sky and seen something they can't identify.
Right.
There's really what we're asking about is what are the residual UFOs, the stuff we can't identify? And that's really the main question that we really want to address, because there are things associated with those that are very difficult to decipher, very difficult to pinpoint, very difficult to even make sense of. Most of the UFO sightings that go on today, and everybody knows what a UFO is, an unidentified flying object. Mm-hmm. But most of the things that people look at that are unidentified actually are identifiable. Someone can figure out what it is if they investigate it. And the facts be known, most UFO sightings that are actually reported are really never even investigated. So just because the person that sees it doesn't know what it is doesn't mean that we can't find out what they actually saw.
Right.
So what are UFOs? Well, what does science say about UFOs is really what we're asking. And science has been involved at least in contemporary times to investigating UFOs since way back in the 1940s and even a little bit before that. I kind of put the demarcation at the Orson Welles broadcast of the War of the Worlds in 1938. And from then on, and that kind of was, if people don't know what that was, the War of Worlds broadcast in 1938 was a radio broadcast of a story that we had been invaded by alien beings. And it was put on when people didn't really know that much about aliens, and the worst thing about the broadcast is people didn't know it was a story. It was a fictional story, and so there was some panic about it, but from about then on, people really became cognizant of the fact of what UFOs were and started to attach alien beings to them as well, visiting us from other planets. But getting back to the scientific question, the scientific issue, probably one of the primary scientist that has investigated the UFO phenomenon is J. Allen Hynek. Around the time of 1947-1948, there were some instances that happened with UFOs that kind of sparked the movement and kind of sparked even, especially into the 1950s, the United States government wanting to get involved in the investigation of UFOs. And J. Allen Hynek basically put together, and he was asked by the government to help out in this project, basically put together a first encounter, a second encounter, and a third encounter. And the first encounter had to do with observing on a daylight sky some phenomenon in the sky, whether it was a disc shape or a light. And then also first encounters included nocturnal lights, as well as some visual contact on radar screens. And so he classified them as first encounters. And second encounters were when actual physical results were left. Something that was burned, grass, trees, or shrubs were actually left. And then he had a third encounter where actually it was claimed by the witness to actually see an alien being or an alien spacecraft, an alien associated with the spacecraft itself. And since then, scientific researchers have identified at least two more categories of fourth encounters and fifth encounters. And the fourth encounters have to do with direct contact, in most cases, with the alien being itself, of which they are actually abducted in most cases. And then fifth encounters had to do where actual physical injury or either death is suffered by the witness itself. Those are very rare encounters. Most of the UFO encounters or sightings fit the category of a first encounter. But it's important to understand that most of the scientific work that has been done on UFOs has really found an explanation for most of the UFOs that have actually been investigated. And it's categorized, those explanations are categorized in two areas. One is natural phenomenon, the other one is man-made phenomenon. And when we talk about natural phenomenon, we're talking about the moon, the stars, and the planets that people look at and just, it looks different on a certain night, especially Venus, weather conditions, meteors, swarms, birds, insects that can give off light, reflected light, atmospheric distortions, light refractions. There's all kinds of lightning, all kinds of things that naturally occur that people just don't know about that can be mistaken for UFOs. Then the man-made phenomenon that exists has to do with hoaxes, pranks, frauds, things that are mistaken, that are satellites. Military aircraft is a big area, blimps, lasers, searchlights, and all types of things that just have a man-made source that can be used to identify it. And really what we find out when science investigates UFOs, we find out that about 10 to 5% is not explainable with either natural or man-made phenomenon. And that 10 to 5% that's left over has taken on the name of what's called a RUFO or a residual UFO. And this is really the question that we're asking when we say, what are UFOs? What's the stuff that we can't actually explain? But I think it's important for our watchers to really understand that most of what goes on with UFOs that's actually investigated has an actual explanation. 90 to 95% actually has an explanation. Well, that's a long way to get to really there's two hypotheses that are put forward by UFO investigators. The one is the extraterrestrial hypothesis, and that's the one that probably people see in the media a lot. They see it represented on TV and the movies, and UFO enthusiasts are crazy about the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And this is basically the view that an objective physical space entity, or what we might call an alien, is actually visiting Earth or making an interplanetary visitation. And they have the technical and the moral capacity to visit our planet, and whatever we think or whatever they say or whatever they are about, whether it's known or not, that's one explanation that's put forward, even by some scientists. Now, the second explanation is what's called an interdimensional hypothesis. And this is the view that there are not space aliens that are actually visiting Earth. This is the view that their origin is some realm beyond the space-time universe. It may be, depending on someone's worldview, paranormal, occultic, or from the Christian perspective, demonic.
That's where I think we're heading. Before we get to there, we always hear these conspiracy theories, Roswell, the government is trying to cover up the existence of aliens because the world would panic and there would be chaos. In your studies of this, because I know you've been doing this for since the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and you actually spoke on this topic at the National Apologetics Conference.
Yes.
And so you've done a lot of research on this. Mm-hmm. Have you been able to detect a cover-up, a government cover-up?
Well, there are certain things that the government clearly did cover up. Let's take the Roswell incident, for example. In 1947, it was first claimed that a disc had actually crashed at Roswell. Immediately the next day, it's clear that the authorities involved in that covered up, because they then said that a weather balloon had crashed, or a balloon had crashed, and they provided pictorial evidence to us regarding that. And one thing that's kind of interesting about the Roswell incident, although there was speculation even at that time that it was a disc and there were alien beings involved, basically we lost track of Roswell for about 70 years until about the 1970s, 1980s, where it was picked up by UFO enthusiasts. So there's no doubt that some things have been covered up, but the real question is, why are they covering something up? And it's interesting that in 1994, a senator pushed the government to actually reinvestigate the Roswell incident. And one of the things that they announced as a result of that investigation were at least three possible things that could have happened. And one had to do with the fact that it may have covered up what's called the Mughal Project, which dealt with using balloons to measure atomic radiation related to the Cold War incidents. And one of those balloons may have crashed. They also said that an airline tanker may have crashed. And the third thing had to do with that it may have been a fact that a balloon that was being used to throw dummies out of high-altitude parachute openings may have crashed. And that may have been either the tanker crash, or that may have explained some of the eyewitnesses that actually said they saw what they thought were actually alien beings. So there's no doubt that things are being covered up. But I really think that the motive of the government at the time, and the motive of the government even now, and I know I won't convince conspiracy theorists of this, was really to cover up top secret, because all three of those things were actually top secret that were going on. And the motive was to basically cover that up. It may very well have been the fact that they tried to cover it up with a disc, and then they kind of backed off of that because they didn't want the UFO problem. One of the things in the government that has investigated UFOs over quite a long period of time has to do with the fact that the government has really been concerned about the UFO phenomenon from a national security perspective.
Yeah.
And their concern isn't that they're going to be invaded by alien beings. Their concern is primarily that a UFO frenzy in the society and culture where they get lots of calls or lots of hysteria could actually cover an actual attack. And of course, the Cold War was going on back in the 1940s and in the 1950s when there were certain instances of hysteria, or what we might call UFO flaps. That's heightened interest in UFOs, the reporting of UFOs. That's really been their major concern. Of investigating UFOs from the start. In fact, one of the major projects that lasted several years was Project Blue Book. And Project Blue Book really isn't a book per se. Project Blue Book is actually a period of time in which they actually investigated as much UFO incidences that they could actually investigate during that time. And they investigated those, and at the end of that, they really found that there was no threat to national security. And they really wanted to kind of get rid of the project itself and just kind of stop it after they discovered there was no threat. The notion of alien beings, or the spaceship from other planetary systems or something like that, really was not a major concern of the government at all. It was an interesting scientific question on the side that they might have discovered an answer to, and some involved in the project may have considered that an important thing, but they were primarily concerned with the threat to the United States, and once they found that there was no threat, they wanted to get rid of the project and stop it completely.
You were talking before about an occult connection. You started talking about the occult. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
Is there an occult connection?
There is an occult connection, and one of the things that we see in the UFO phenomenon is that in the 1980s, there's a number of New Agers. I could name a few. Brad Steiger, Shirley MacLaine is known by a lot of individuals, a movie actor, that got involved in the New Age. And one of the things that they started in the 1980s actually identifying with is messages from alien beings. And of course, the message that was coming from the alien beings was a new age message, that they're in the new age is about ushering in a new age. And along with that new age are certain beliefs that they hold to. And most of those beliefs involve a denial of essential historic Christian beliefs as well, such as the deity of Jesus Christ or the Trinity or the sinfulness of human beings, are completely denied. And in the place of those, they emphasize the deity of humanity and that man can become his own God and that we are individual gods. Well, these types of messages, they said, were coming from alien beings. So there's definitely an occultic connection there.
Well, you know, and also that whole thing about elevating man, the deity of man, that goes right back to the garden. It's very clear to me that the source is the same because mm-hmm. the message is the same.
That's
Do you
exactly
want to be
right.
like God? You know?
That's exactly right. And that's where you can make the connection to the occultic. Another place where we started to get messages is the instances of abductees, or at least people who claimed actually to be abducted by alien spacecraft or alien beings. And the pattern pretty much fits what we have been investigated by scientists. People are in bed at night or in their car and they're taken away into a spaceship. Things are done to them that are against their will, and then they're eventually brought back. And one of the things that's common with almost all abductees is they come back with a different belief system. It may not be immediate, but eventually they come back with a different belief system. And this belief system that they come back with is against the historic Christian faith. They come back with beliefs that are very much along the lines of New Age, denying the deity of Jesus Christ and accepting various paranormal understanding or occultic understanding of the world. And so these two connections put together with teachers of the New Age and abductees coming back really does, as you say, take us back to the garden and to Satan and to demonic influence that Christians have recognized all along.
So just to be clear, mm-hmm. it is your belief, and actually I believe this as well, mm-hmm. that there's actually demonic forces behind UFO.
When you can clearly make the connection with the doctrine that is demonic
right.
or against Christianity, I have no problem saying that there's demonic influence going on.
Right.
Now, there are probably a couple clarifications to make along with that. As I said before, most of the UFO instances or sightings that actually take place are completely explainable and probably don't involve any occultic connection whatsoever. So again, it's just this residual left over, what I would call bizarre UFO encounters, particularly when they involve abductions, and we can trace the teaching that goes on and the belief system of the individual, that you can really make that connection. Also, another, I think, important distinction to make is that it's not necessarily the case that we're talking about demons in the ontological sense.
Explain that word, ontological. Dr. Potter, so you're a doctor. You're going to have to break it down a little bit.
I understand. Ontology is the study of being. So I don't actually have to say that demonics are, or demons themselves are present with every, even our UFO necessarily. That is, every light in the sky that behaves funny, or every explanation, or every UFO that we can't really come to an explanation of, doesn't really mean that a demon is behind every single one of those.
Right.
But when you do connect it with the teaching that is demonic and against Christianity, then I have no problem saying we're dealing with the occult, we're dealing with the doctrines of demons, and it could very well be that people are very involved in demonic activity, unfortunately.
Why do you think Satan is doing this? What is this?
Oh, goal? Well, Satan is opposed. Satan has always, since the garden, since his fall, been opposed to the plan of God, to everything that God does, and completely opposed to it. And he is wanting to counter the truth of God wherever he can and however he can. There's a passage in Ephesians that Paul writes about demons, principalities and powers associated with demons. And he actually uses descriptions there that are very much akin to a Roman army. that there are ranks among these demons. They are organized, so it's a concerted effort to actually deceive humanity about the truth of God,
yeah.
and to distract people away from the things of God. And anything that does that, you can, to a certain extent, say has its origin with Satan and demonic activity.
Yeah, I remember taking a class from Dr. Ron Rose, who is the expert mm-hmm. in cults.
Yes, he is.
And I remember him saying one time that Satan has a cult or a belief system for anything that you can imagine.
That's right.
So no matter what it is, I mean, if you're into hedonism, just sexual things, mm-hmm. he's got a cult for you. If you're into yeah. legalism, he's got a cult for you. Whatever it is, he's
That's
got a
right.
cult for you. And this is just one of those cults that he's provided as an opportunity for those who find this interesting.
I agree with you completely.
So,
yes.
And another thing I want to ask you then, what about these UFO cults? We hear about UFO cults.
You're right.
More and more.
You're exactly right. There are a number of UFO cults. In fact, the number is growing quite a bit. Probably the most famous or well-known cult that everyone is really familiar with is the Heaven's Gate cult.
Yeah.
That in 1997, about 39 individuals actually killed themselves. But they killed themselves under the belief that it, when they died, they would actually go to an alien spacecraft that was behind the Hale-Bopp comet. In fact, I got a chance to go and look at that comet during that time period, I think that one of the things that you look at with regards to their entire belief system, as well as other UFO cults, is they are directly opposed again to the historic Christian faith, and so. Interest in UFOs, interest in pursuing UFOs, can lead people and expose people to these kinds of teachings of various cults and groups out there and into the New Age and into the occult in general and paranormal happenings, and it can become very deceptive for them.
Yeah, I remember actually watching a show that came on this channel. It was a cult, the Unarius cult. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. But I used to watch it. It was mm-hmm. to me, it was just fascinating.
Yeah.
It would come on every week. And the whole premise was that, you know, there was this lady, and she called herself an archangel.
Mm-hmm.
She would actually channel to other worlds.
Yeah.
And these other beings would talk to her about how to make life on this planet better.
Right.
And so what was interesting is I was watching them, but they were like, like 5 or 6 years
mm-hmm.
old. And I was watching one episode, and they said that the Space Brothers, that's what they call them, the Space Brothers,
mm-hmm.
who eventually were going to come to Earth and, you know, and just invite us into the Confederation, and life would be great.
Mm-hmm.
The Space Brothers were going to come and visit us in October of 2001. And
mm-hmm.
when I was watching this, it was after October
right.
of 2001. So I said, oh, my goodness, let me go to the website and see what
mm-hmm.
did they use for an excuse as
yeah.
to why the Space Brothers didn't come.
Mm-hmm.
The excuse was 9/11, negative mm-hmm. energy, Space Brothers couldn't come.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
How convenient.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that might be interesting is the fact that this notion of alien beings actually being able to travel from other planetary systems really has a lot of strong scientific evidence against that possibility. And that being the case, it really makes the interdimensional hypothesis much more of a viable hypothesis. Let me just give you some examples. Extraterrestrial space travel is very unlikely. One of the reasons has to do with the fact that the nearest star to Earth is about 25 trillion miles away. And traveling at half the velocity of light, which is not possible, the best engines that we have that we can conceive of and build could only get us at about 1% the speed of light. But let's say at half the velocity of light, it would take 9 years for someone to travel them from there. But there's actually no star nearer to us than 50 light years away. And you couldn't even have the individual take a straight course from where that is to where we are because of all the dangers that exist in outer space. They'd have to take a zigzag course. They'd have to go through galactic hazards such as gravity forces and attraction, radiation, gas, dust, comets, and even the attraction of late-born stars. So they'd have to take a zigzag course. And going even at 1% the speed of light, you're talking about 23,000 years if we could get from 230 light years to here. It's it's very unlikely that physical alien beings are able to make those travel through there. Now, one of the things that's brought up is the issue of wormholes, which are mostly theoretical and mathematical. But nonetheless, the theory basically states that, based on Einstein's relativity, that space can bend. Time-space can bend, and if you could bend like this sheet of paper right here, if you had to travel across this sheet of paper, and that was such a far distance, if you could bend the sheet and travel this way like that, then it would be much quicker. The problem is the only places those could exist are with black holes, and black holes statistically aren't going to line up with where they need to travel, are very unlikely that they're going to line up, much less if you go through a black hole, you're completely destroyed.
Okay.
So space travel just isn't really an option.
Okay, Dr. Potter, we only have a few seconds left, 30 seconds left. What do you say to the Christian who's involved in this pursuing UFOs? What are the dangers?
Absolutely. To the Christian, it's a waste of time.
Okay.
it's a waste of their life. It's a waste of their time that they could be spending on kingdom things. Or the scriptures in pursuing and doing the work of God. UFOs are just simply a waste of time, and we must do the work of the Father now rather than to be distracted by things that just are not productive to His kingdom.
Okay, thank you for being on the show.
Okay.
Dr. Doug Potter talking with me about UFOs, a Christian perspective. And that will end this episode of Giving an Answer. Be sure to join me again next time. And until then, goodbye. And God bless.
All are invited to attend a Christianity 101 class that HC will be teaching at the Journey Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. Topics include the nature of God, creation, salvation, the end times, and more. The class will begin at 11 a.m. following the 10 a.m. service starting July the 6th and will continue for 8 weeks. You can find out more information by calling 704-264-9922 or visiting the website at journeycharlotte.com.
The preceding show has been sponsored by Giving an Answer with your host, H.C. Felder. So you can hear this broadcast as well as other episodes by visiting us online at givinganswer.org. You can also order a CD or a DVD of the studio recording by calling me at 704-248-7840. And remember, this show will only stay on the air if people continue to help us buy airtime. So I encourage you to consider making a tax-deductible financial donation to this ministry. That phone number again is 704-248-7840. And be sure to join me again next time on Giving an Answer.